besides the church and the observatory.
Oh, wow.
That you paid attention to.
Oh, my God, how can I forget? Again, I'm the impression you're not too aware of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Some.
That time, one of Frank Lloyd Wright's most famous buildings is the Hollyhock House.
Of course, I've been there.
And when I was like 8, 10, 11, I used to ride my bike catty corner up to, from the corner of Sunset and Edgemont.
Sure.
And I'd go up there and I'd fish for pollywogs in the Hollyhock House.
You would?
Yeah, I could ride my bike up there and I loved that building. It looked like a Mayan temple, not that I was that aware of Mayan or that sort of thing at the time, but I admired it. But it, thinking about now, it's so many in later years how important it was to me, how much I enjoyed it, and various parties and festivities, and friends of mine have been involved with that. But to look back and think of when I was used to ride my bike and fish for pollywogs, I'll never forget that.
Was it legal for you to do that?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't gated. That whole hill from Vermont to Edgemont and Hollywood to Sunset was all Barnesdale property, and there wasn't anything else on it.
Huh.
And my understanding is that when she died, and she, of course, she left it in her will to the city, and somehow, I don't know how, and I'm not going to concern myself with too much, but they sold off some of the property, and now on Vermont it's all the big shopping centers, and on Hollywood Boulevard it's a car wash, and you know, it just ruined that whole idyllic spot up there.
Mm.
But fortunately they saved Hollyhock, and it's in bad shape right now. I mean, the earthquake, man,
it
will be restored, but it's always been one of my favorite buildings. And
why? You said it's like a Mayan temple, but what about it really speaks to you?
I got into architecture and been able to study the plan and be involved with Frank Lloyd Wright, and what a great, exciting building it was, the detailing and the way it worked, and this refinement of it. It's a magnificent building. I mean, in its heyday, I never got inside it, but that would have been a great, great treat, but I wouldn't have been able to appreciate it as much as I do now, because it was a classic, fabulous piece of architecture, a total thing. And only would you really get no right in his work as much as I do, could you appreciate what a great piece of work that is.
That's wonderful. Any other buildings that you think of?
That's all I can think of right now.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was, oh my God, I couldn't forget that. That was very important to my childhood.
Wow, and how old were you when you biked up there, would you say?
Well, when I first came to California, so I was, you know, ten years old, and I was selling magazines, and I don't know, it was only about 6 blocks from my home, and I used to pedal around, and for some reason, whether with a friend, but I remember just going up catty corner on my own.
That's great.
But,
can't do that in LA anymore, very many
not
places.
Not really, no. It's over 65 years ago.
Sure. Well, you were talking about going back from the islands to the service?
Yeah, I was very much willing to get back from getting out of the island, because you're going to, after 2 years there, it's even though it was fun, it's not easy, and no really conveniences, but I'm very happy when I was shipped back to the States. That's always a great thing. And they sent me to DeLand, Florida, which is a naval training station. And I had, by that time, I was a second-class parachute rigger. So I was, I had the stripes and all that sort of thing. And I was, again, there, it was a naval training, where they train the pilots. And so there were a lot of, quite a few accidents, but that's where all the young ensigns came in there and learned to fly, and day flying and night flying and all that. And I was helping pack in all the parachutes. And I also instructed all the young pilots how to use the safety equipment, because all the seat pads were loaded with that they set on part of the parachutes and that, and they also had things like mirrors and food rations and capsules and medication and band-aids and life raft, all that sort of thing. because a lot of the flying was overseas, over water. So you had to train them how to get out of a chute when they parachute over water, because one of the biggest hazards was when you're parachuting over water, it's deceiving how far you are from water. When you think the water is, you're supposed to get out of your, unbuckle the straps and kind of hold on to the straps. So as the minute you hit the water, your chute will float away and you won't let the chute come down on top of you and come up under the chute and not get out and drown. So it's the whole idea is let the chute float away, but not until your feet hit the water do you let go of it. But the biggest thing is a deception. You might think you're just 20 feet away or 30 feet or 10 feet away from water. You might be 100 feet.
Really?
So you let go too soon and you can kill yourself, and you might be 500 feet. Because you have, you know, your horizon. And so that was a very important thing to teach the pilots, along with the use of the life raft and safety equipment. And I enjoyed that a lot, and I could get all the work done in the morning and then go up to Daytona Beach and Miami Beach and have a good time in Florida. And that was a great period. And ironically, there was a chance for someone to go to a parachute school. See, I had been trained in all this overseas and about packing parachutes and all that sort of, but I had seniority, so, and I really wanted to go up to Lakehurst. So they sent me up to Lakehurst to parachute school, even though I was already rated second class. So that was very exciting because we had a class with sailors and Marines, and it was, I think, about a 10-week course. And we had liberties in New York City and Philadelphia and Asbury Park. So it was a great place. And Lakehurst is, I don't know, you sometime in your life have seen when the Hindenburg blew up.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Well, that's Lakehurst, New Jersey.
That's right. Now I'm remembering.
So, and to graduate from school, we had to pack our own chute and jump our own chute. Uh-huh. So came the day for graduation, or before, we'd have to go up in the blimp, like they, you know, fly around here.
Yeah.
It's a K ship. And you, that's 6 or 8 at a time, and you do a free fall. Jump out at 2,000 feet and parachute.
How did it go?
Fabulous. It's great. Very exciting.
Wow. So was that the first time you'd actually jumped from a...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's first... There was no reason to jump.
Sure. Sure.
But it was... Even, you know, I was like 21, 20 at the time. It was extremely exciting. Man, I had a great, great sensation in the world of floating down in that parachute. Of course, I trained you well ahead of time on how to land and how to get in and get rid of the chute. And a lot of things that you have to learn. It's much simpler now, the way the chutes are designed, you can control them more.
Really?
At that time, you just had 28 shroud lines and no control whatsoever. You just came down depending on the wind and you had to go from there. So, much different situation.
So but it was early 1945 when you went to Florida and then New Jersey? Approximately.
Yeah, I'm running there. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went back to Florida and then I was discharged.
Because the war ended?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I was in New York, VJ Day.
You were?
Yeah.
Wow. So tell me about that. What was it like?
Well, I mean, it's the most exciting thing that could possibly happen. I mean, any time you see pictures of it, and we had our sailors and Marines, everyone was hugging everyone and kissing everyone and yelling and screaming and, you know, celebrating. It was, the war was over. And so...
Did you go to Times Square or some certain place?
Yeah, oh yeah. That, you know, as close as you could get. It was just total chaos. So that was very, very dramatic.
Wow.
And then went back to Florida and there for a little while and then was discharged.
Wow.
And then went up to... I had heard that you could buy cars and they were cheaper in Detroit.
Oh.
Instead of, and so I made the, being fairly naive at that time, I went up to Detroit to buy a car to drive home instead of going home and saving that time and effort and buying a car here, a little more money. But anyway, I went to Detroit. I guess I wanted the experience of traveling a little more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I drove it across the states to home and then I was a civilian again.
So that must have taken you a good couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then you're a civilian and then what'd you do?
Well, luckily, then I knew I had the GI Bill. This is where it all comes together. I mean, all my, one of the various very lucky things in my life. I started night school. Night school at City College first, or
LA
class
City College?
City College down to Vermont, because I was very close there, and I really concentrated hard on that. And then I applied for School of Architecture
at USC.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be damned if I didn't get accepted. So,
were you not sure that you would?
Well, I didn't. I hadn't planned for college. I had just high school diploma, and I think it had a lot to do with being in the service. And I don't know how many were applying at that particular time to get into architecture, but the timing was just right, and I was accepted.
Do you remember what you had to do to get in? Did you have to draw something or write
something? No, we just had to apply, and it's a damn good thing, because I really wasn't trained to be going to School of Architecture.
What made you decide to apply, though, to the School
because
of Architecture?
Because one of those little things that happen in your life that you can't explain, it just happened.
That's really neat.
Yeah, and I just had that desire, if I get a chance to go to college, and what else could be better? There was a time in high school where I thought I was very good at figures and that sort of thing, so I thought I could be a CPA because I was very good in that. But I guess when I had the chance to go to college, I realized that being a CPA would be pretty damn boring. working with figures and all that sort of thing, and that didn't appeal to me at that time, but architecture did.
That's
and
wonderful.
Luckily, I was accepted.
So did you start in the fall of 46, or when did you
yeah,
start?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And I graduated in 52, so I had to start in, it was a 5-year course. So I took 1 year at City College.
Oh, right.
And so at 57, I got into SC. It's a 5-year course. And it was pretty rough the first year, but I worked very hard. I was able to, most of the other chaps there were pretty much the same category as I in terms of design capabilities and what they're teaching, what had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And then luckily, for some strange reason, I think the second year, I joined a fraternity.
Oh.
Because I was under the impression that was the sort of thing to do. I joined Sigma Phi Epsilon.
Yeah.
And Ernie Wilson was a member of the fraternity. He graduated, but he was Ernie Wilson of Langdon Wilson Architects. At that time, we're doing a lot of the large commercial buildings in Los Angeles and California. And Ernie one day asked me, because I was the only one in the fraternity that was in architecture, he said, asked me to pick up some drawings at the building department, make some corrections.
Oh.
So I said, okay, and not knowing what the hell I was doing, but I made the corrections, and I somehow was able to get the permit, and I took it down to the builder, Harry Britton, in Lakewood. And Harry Britton was building tract homes at that time.
Oh, right, Lakewood.
And did it right after the war. So he said, Don, how would you like to get a student from SC and come down here and do a tract of homes during the summer? And how could I turn that down? I said, well, sure, I'll see what I can do. So Conrad Buff had some experience. Well, he was one of the top students in the class, even second year. I knew he'd worked for an architect before. So I asked him, and he said, sure. And another one, James Chapman, but he didn't last very long with us. But Conrad and I went down there that summer, and we did a tract of 45 homes. And then we did 63, and then 125, and then 325. So before we knew it, we had done close to 6,000 tract homes.
Was that normal?
Still,
for architecture students?
Oh, no. I mean, a lot of things in my life are completely unorthodox. I was paying our way through college, my way. Conrad's was pretty much subsidized by his parents, but I was really on my own. My mother had died, and she died my first year, I think, when I joined City College.
Oh.
My father was traveling a lot, and my sisters were married, so I was already on my own.
What did your mother die of?
Pneumonia, I think.
Oh, sorry.
And, so anyway, Conrad and I were doing all these tracks, and we were literally working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, the school and working for Harry Britton and doing all these tracks. And it was okay. We were very young and energetic. And luckily, Conrad's father, the very well-known painter in Eagle Rock, in Pasadena, I don't know if you ever heard of Conrad Buff or his paintings.
Read a little bit about him.
Okay, well, he's done some fabulous things. So we had designed a new studio for him, and we took over his old studio, which was below where Buff and his wife lived.
In Eagle Rock?
In Eagle Rock. And we were doing those tract homes, and then while we were still students, we did a home for my aunt and uncle on Burbank.
Oh.
Which is still standing.
What street? Are you know
it's out on Scott Avenue, Scott Road.
Do you know the number?
No.
Okay.
And, but I went by there a few years ago, and it's still there. And then we did both parents bought about 10 acres up in Arrowhead in the North Shore. And we did an A-frame weekend retreat for them in a little paint studio. And later on today, I will show you, it's our first cover of the LA Times home section.
Really?
1952. This is exactly 50 years, almost to the day. We got our first cover, that was the A-frame that we did for the Buff family up in Arrowhead.
Wow, what did you think was special about that building?
Well, up there you had to have designed for snow load, so the roof had to have a certain angle on it.
Yeah.
So we said, why design a house and put a roof on it? Why not build a big A-frame, which we did on the grounds, and then lift it up. That was a series of frames. You lifted up, and that formed the lower floor, and then we floated the middle floor, upper floor, in between all of the upper portion of the A. And but you can see A.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Floor. Nothing unique about it. At that time, it was pretty unusual, and it solved all the problems, and it was fairly inexpensive. And we didn't know that much about architecture at the time, and some of it was experimental. But between the two of us, we worked it out, and it was kind of a classic, and it solved a lot of problems.
What was it like to build 45 tract houses, never having built anything before or designed anything before?
Oh, they were basically the same sort of structure that they were doing then, except that we cleaned them up. You know what I mean? They reorganized the windows. We talked them. We could not, at that time, convince them to attach the garage to the house. And way back then, so many people had come out back east. They're used to the house and the barn in the back, and the wagon in the back, and all that. And we were so convinced it was a waste of time, a waste of land, to have the house here and a carway in the back, and have all that driveway devoted to the automobile. And the danger inherent with children and all of that, and the inconvenience of parking your car back there and bringing your groceries into the house. And we finally convinced them to attach the garage to the house so that you could get out of the house in the rain, and you get out of the garage into the house with the groceries, on and on. And that was one of the biggest innovations. Plus, we simplified roofs, we simplified some of the framing, we modulated things, and as time went on, we made a much better home than they were doing before. And it's what we would call most houses, we just call them house houses. this space boxes with windows in it, but we tried to make it a little better, and we organized the sites, and we staggered setbacks, and we did a lot of innovative things that are very simple and very obvious today, but weren't at that time.
Was there ever a time when you sat there and looked at Conrad and said, how did we get ourselves into this? We don't know what we're doing.
No,
you knew.
No, we were doing it better, and it was, you know, we were making a little money at the time. It gave us something to do.
Sure.
And we worked very hard at it. Like I say, working 20 hours a day.
That's incredible.
But it, we were having a good time. We were getting through the university, and then the other, we did those two houses at the same time, but then the other really unusual thing that happened, which is one of those things that are unpredictable in life, both Conrad and I were assistants to professors in the School of Architecture. I was assistant to Clayton Baldwin, and he died during the semester, the last semester, our fifth year. And so the dean said, Don, would you mind continue teaching his classes? We were fifth year students, and this was basic design, which is the first year of design, which is sure, because we knew all about it and all that, we were old hands. So we continued teaching the rest of that year, and then the dean asked us to continue teaching basic design, and wondered if we wanted to teach second year, and said, sure. Conrad taught some third year, and I taught basic design, and later on second year, and some third year design. So we were unique in that we were not only students, but we were also practicing architecture, and then we were also teaching all at the same time.
That's amazing.
And then we went right from graduation right into professorship. And so I stayed there from that SE teaching for another 10 years.
So you knew some of the other USC architects of the time very well? Who were some of the people you were especially close to on staff there?
Well, Emmett Wimp was a good friend. He was a landscape architect. He was the one that did the Getty Museums and all.
Right.
But Cal Straub, who became a partner of ours, was a very good architect. And there was Robert Alexander and Quincy Jones, who's one of the top people. And Bill Pereira, William Pereira, was a professor of mine. There's just a book, SC just came out with a new book on Pereira,
Yes.
And he was a professor of mine. And it's hard to think of all the names right
sure,
now.
Sure, sure.
But they'll come. It's got a lot of things in my mind right now. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, and sure.
All right, let's let it go. I was wondering about how your partnership with Conrad Buff worked. Did one of you bring a different set of talents and expertise, or?
No, that's amazing. Well, that's a typical question.
Yeah.
It was a amazing relationship. We were completely different people, but we had tremendous rapport. And we'd worked on all the tract work. We worked on the two houses together, and we, of course, classmates and all of that. And then when Conrad, when we graduated, he had a very wealthy uncle that gave him a trip to Europe on his graduation. So for Conrad and his wife, and he asked me if I wanted to go along, pay my own way, of course. And I knew that if I didn't go then, I wouldn't go until I was 65. I mean, at that time, I felt, you know, when I'd retire and be in a wheelchair or some damn thing. So I said, hell yes. And I scraped together like $900 or something. And we got to New York. I think they drove, they had two kids at the time. So they left one with both of them, I think, with relatives in Salt Lake City. And somehow I took the train or flew, whatever it was, to New York. We went over on the Flandre, and we picked up a car in Malvern, which we went to London first and spent some time there. And went and picked up the car, and then drove up through Scotland, and then took a boat over to Holland and drove down the Rhine and all through Germany and down to Italy and back up to Paris, and the whole 3 months we had just a fabulous time. We had driving the car over in this little It was a minor Morgan car. And of course, Conrad and Libby got the front seats, and I got to ride on top of the luggage in the back of this little tiny car. Only one, I have a lot of memories of that, but one of the most memorable is crossing the Alps from Milan into Switzerland and getting stuck on a snow-covered road, hairpin turn, and you know what to do. And a group of Swiss soldiers came by in a truck, and they got out and they kind of laughed, and we got out of the car, and they picked up the Morgan and carried her around the curve and dropped her. We got back in and on the way. Little things like that. But so that was her. We knew that we could get along when you spent 3 months with someone and his wife and all of that. And then we, Kel Straub, who was also a professor at the time, he was ahead of us, and George Kirkpatrick, who was a fellow classmate, the four of us started studying for a state board together.
Okay.
That's a very important thing. You, to get your license, you have to have a degree in architecture and then some, a couple of years working. And then we studied for the state board, and we, Conrad and I, had got a job to do in Pasadena, one of our first jobs for Ben and Regina Merriman.
Right.
It was a great house, but they were interviewing Kel Straub, and they were interviewing us. I think they took us because they got two for the price of one. But, of course, Kel was a little concerned. He didn't get the job. But I think as a result of that particular competition, we said, why are we in competition? Why don't we join forces?
Uh-huh.
So Kel Straub joined Buff and Hinsman.
And that was later, right?
Like that was a little later.
1957 or
yeah, so? Yeah, a little okay. later. But that was the beginning of that, of studying for the state board and competing in some of the jobs. And most of our jobs we were doing then were in Pasadena.
Right.
So that's where we really got our start architecturally.
So the Lakewood project was kind of a warm-up for what
was happening. Yeah, Lakewood really got Buff and me together and gave us experience in working with people and working in a drafting room. And then I went to work for Langdon Wilson for just a small bit. I never really did work for an architect for a long time. We did, we were already on our own, and when Straub finally joined us, we did Lowry Foods headquarters, by San Fernando Road. We did a big home for Richard and Mary Alice Frank in Pasadena, right over the Arroyo, and of course, the Tater House up in Sierra Madre, and we were doing little houses all over the Pasadena. Which is really, we didn't do, even our office at that particular time was in Eagle Rock. Almost all of our work was in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. But mainly we stayed in Eagle Rock, but that's where we had virtually a free office.
Right. What street was that on?
Linda Rosa.
Linda Rosa?
And a little significant in that one of Conrad's father's good friends coming over from the old country was Richard Neutra.
Oh, gosh.
And there's little, you can see some of the influence of Richard Neutra's redesigning the facade of that house. So you can pick up some of the masses that Richard undoubtedly helped him when he put on a garage or something like that.
Oh, that's great.
And Conrad grew up with Dion Neutra, so it was kind of fun. But there was so much happening at that particular time, but we, and then another evolution happened at that particular time. When we got back from Europe, we were there 3 months. Mm-hmm. We had nothing to do. And so we were a little desperate to get back and start making some money. I didn't have any money, no income of any sort. But we did want to keep the partnership together. And when we had designed a home for Elsa Morris up in La Cañada, and she said, well, she hadn't been able to get any builders to build it for the right price she could afford, and so we said, well, why don't we build it for you?
Oh, gosh.
Aha. So, not knowing again what the hell we were doing, we did a little homework and we got some bids together and we built that house. That was our first house, and that was the beginning of us being agents of the owner and building houses that we designed. And that's continued up to today, which this house here, which I designed and built myself with, pretty agent of owner, you know, Alex Mosley was here all the time and all that, but it was, I was acting in the capacity of a general contractor, but still, so that was a, one of those things, and it was not necessarily premeditated by a long shot, but it was just the circumstances that developed. And
what year was that house in La Cañada, approximately?
Well, it must have been around, 53 or 4, something like that. Because we graduated in 52.
Right.
And I think in around, and that was in June or something, in July or August we went to Europe. And it was August, September, October, November, something like that. I can remember because it was in Venice, we went out the island, it was very cold. And then also up in Paris it was pretty cold, so I knew it was wintertime.
Okay.
And so then we got back, and then we also did another house, a very large house for Dr. Fisher, who was a dentist. And it was one of our biggest, at that time, a big house. But he was kind enough to give us a break to build a house for him because, he, as he told us later on, someone had given him a break when he was a young dentist, done some things for him, and he wanted to reciprocate in some way. So he let Conrad and I